It doesn't come out as a perfect example, but it's pretty good, you know? The carbon dioxide would kill you if you continue to only breathe that. Well, if one is expecting what life is going to be brought to it, it would be thought of as the oxygen that would come in, having used it all through the body, expelling that which it took out with it. It's just an exercise, and it does feel good. Yes. That was that has to do with the fact that every part of us is actually making a sound. And, well, you can see it actually if you go into a hospital. You see all those things bleeping and tuning with their rhythms and everything. My God, you would think you were in a symphony orchestra. I think it's for each individual to find those things in themselves. Because if I tell you it, so okay, so I've told you, it doesn't make it actual for you. That whole thing about, it's like a recipe. Recipes in a cookbook just stay as recipes in a cookbook until you cook the food and eat it. Then you can tell whether it was a good recipe or not. Well, you know what it means? It means raising perception. Somehow or another, you have to get a clue, and you have to search for that clue. I wouldn't go into a meditative state over it. I would get as quiet as I could and try to understand sound. And really, it gets more and more refined all the time. The density of us in the beginning, I was saying yesterday, was like if you find an egg inside a chicken, if they used to sell you chickens that had eggs in them, and that was like just a very hard little ball, undifferentiated. The shell was not there. But gradually, the thinness of the shell, once it's expelled, comes together that way. And the inner egg is understood as being different from the outer shell. I found that my understandings grew like that, from something that was an incipient understanding to a greater understanding. And really, the whole thing about vibration is that when I refined it enough, I could get a sound in my head with which I unite. And for me, that's enough. I unite with that resonance, and I don't think I'm just in that felicitous state of complete peace, and that knowledge is sufficient for me. Now, finding that resonance is not an easy thing, but once found, one should be able to rely on it, unless there is such a clatter from the outside world that you are no longer entitled to your space, and then you have to find your space. But what was interesting about that is that for a little while my children were saying that I was playing the television too loud. They didn't realize I was trying to get the balance of treble and bass together, which was pretty not possible. And they said, there must be something wrong with your hearing. So the next time I went to a doctor actually for a cold, they had a hearing lab there. And I said, you have a hearing lab. Would you test me? And he said, yes. And the test came back astonishing. In one ear, there was 100% hearing, and the other ear was 95%. He said, your hearing is better than mine. And at your age, he said, it's unlikely that you will lose it, because it's usually lost by this time. So I said, oh, can you print that report out? And I took that home to my children, who were crestfallen. And then I began to think about why it was that I heard so well. And I really think it's the vicar where the eye hear the impulse. I actually heard the sound before it became a sound on that test. Now that's my theory. I think it's pretty valid. Yes? We were always aware of the sorrow of the world. We were always aware, first of all, our brothers and sisters were in Sri Lanka. There's a half a world and problem material enough, right? And many of us came from other places where there was sufficient trouble. Where we could help, we did, always. It's not different now. It's pretty much the same. The sadness, I mean, you know, people came to this country all the time from the very beginning, out of strife. You don't gather up everything you have and get yourself on a boat for an unknown place unless there's something not good where you are. So this entire country has been peopled with what happened that is similar to what Andrew Harvey is explaining. You know, it is unbelievable. There must be a little switch that goes on in human beings that either makes them capable of compassion and mercy or not. And I think we have to find out where that is, because there's enough food on this planet. There is enough of everything on this planet. It could be shared so readily. But you know, even when we went to share and brought food to Africa, the Furies launched themselves against it and let the food rot on the beaches. That's unthinkable. So it's more facets than meet the eye. It's a much, much bigger problem. It's not so easy to take a people from a harsh environment, really. Margaret Mead said that harsh environments encourage harsh actions, not good. Well, you know, it's like, what? I don't think that there's a simple answer at all. I think that what I said earlier is, take care of what's near you. And if you can, be a partner to something that is further away. And be kind to yourself, too. I know a lot of people who could begin, really, by being kinder to themselves. And that's really pitiful. We really do try to help that awareness of how worthwhile we are. How could we be worthwhile to somebody else if we're not worthwhile to ourselves? Yes?
You know, it seems to me the answer lies in the mystical path. And the mystical path is not just something that's Islamic. It's all the religions of the world.
Yes.
And they come together in the unity consciousness. And I'm wondering if perhaps the answer to the suffering is when we realize that we are each other, we won't abuse each other.
Perfect.
But even in Islam, and this is a conflict I have because I love the Sufi path,
yes.
The Islamic fundamentalists aren't unity consciousness to a large extent.
They're not really very fundamental either.
Any fundamentalists for that.
Right. It's a misnomer. I refuse to call them fundamental.
So how can the mystics kind of surface, how can the cream rise to the top in these institutions so that they can honor the one God?
I want to tell you how difficult, even in a civilized situation, this is. There began to be another, the beginning of a mosque, that actually our fellowship helped to procure the land for, because the community was dead set against it. And we all, with our American faces and our Irish faces and everything else, came to the community to plead the case for this purchase to be allowed. It was people from Saudi who were buying the land for it to become an Islamic center. The man that they hired began to say not nice things about us, as, you know, Sufis were like, he didn't realize that the only reason he's sitting there in that marvelous place is because we killed ourselves to get it for him in every way. Well, one day I went there to try and just greet him in a good brotherly way. And it was like, okay, I mean, he had his little cakes there to serve me, but there was a forbidding hand. And he said to me, you know, you should read this particular book of the Hadith. So I took that as a command, and I bought the two volumes, and I went through it. And what I was trying to make him understand is that Sufis belong. They're not non-belongers. They belong. And so I found all the hadith that mentioned Muhammad, may peace and blessing be upon him, his own love of the Sufis of his time. And the next meeting that we had, I brought all of this. There was a professor there from Temple University who loves our mosque and who was also friendly there. And he watched that man rudely refuse all the information that I had and refused to speak about it in a very, very, very hostile way. It was so uncomfortable. And not to be, you couldn't find a way around it or over it, or certainly Professor Blankenship would have found it because he was trying to. And he said, I have never seen rudeness like that in my life. And nor had I. And there, here we are in America, in a perfectly beautiful, easy way to be. And the decision was made not to be, and couldn't be circumvented. So that's what we're up against. And this is supposed to be a worshiper of God and a follower of Muhammad and part of the tribe of Abraham. God only knows what he really is, but this is what he purports to be. And so I know how hard the job is. Let's just do what we can. You know, it's what I said yesterday, I intended to do this like 4, 5, 6 pickup sticks, that I would release the problem material and I would work on it, taking the easy ones first and the harder ones next. And I think that's what we have to do. So it would seem to be certainly the better way. Did you have something else here? Well, you know, it's where the religion's emphasis is, really, because I found out that every religion had all of the different states of consciousness and all the different parts of the body. But in Hinduism, their knowledge is really very much about the genitals and what happens in the understanding of procreation and so forth. So there's an emphasis there. Zoroastrianism is where the fire is and the eating process, and then extrapolating it, you know, out to the stars and so forth. But the heat in the body is there. And then the place where the imagination and the imagery for Christianity and the beauty of that which is in the chest is there, both in Christianity and in its way in Hebrew, in the Judaism. And then the light, if the story is, the emphasis is going to be on the light that brings the message, then you would say that it was in that highest aspect of Islam. But all of them have every bit of them. But initially, just making you try to understand the folk by focusing in that way was a good work. You're welcome. Well, if we are finished, I have some nice little kisses for everybody.